Thank you, sir, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. And we have we're a talk show, as you know, and we welcome your participation in our program. If you had like to call in tonight, we have a statewide toll-free number. What is that number, Diane?
1-800-966-1039.
That's right, and you're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 and 103.9 in the Queen City. I think we have a good program lined up tonight. I think you're going to enjoy our guests. We have a couple of phone guests I'll introduce in just a moment. First, the crew, the man behind the toggle switches and the controls there in the operations center, the man who know what how to raise those big boy tomatoes, Mr. Norman Plord.
Good evening, Paul. How you doing?
Do you raise big boys?
Yes, I actually have that variety this year.
Are they big?
I expected them to be bigger, but yeah. they're plenty big.
Oh, yeah. I like those big ones, and you slice off a piece and Diane makes me a BLT with those.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness, they're so good.
And that's what we had for supper tonight.
Did you really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, a good tomato makes a BLT, don't you think?
It sure does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you have a couple extras kicking around there next week, you want to bring them by, we'll put them in between a slice of bread.
I will definitely bring some in next Sunday.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate that. Okay, our co-host tonight is my bride of many, many years. She's an avid outdoors woman, and she's agreed under pressure to come in here tonight to do the phone number and anything else that I might ask her to do. Right, Diane?
If you say so.
And the number again, if you're at home and you're trying to figure out how to call us, the number is
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, and we have a couple of good phone guests tonight. The first guest is Mark Laddie. Mark is the Communications Director for the Maine Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Mark will be with us during the Outdoor Digest time to tell you about a career information sessions that are going to take place around the state. Now, if you're a young person who's interested possibility in becoming a Maine game warden, Mark's going to tell you where you can go. You can sit down with some active duty game wardens, and you can ask them any kind of questions. If you're interested, maybe a career like that, they'll be glad to fill you in, and you can find out all kinds of information at these meetings. And he's going to tell us about that in a few minutes. A couple of other things. Then after that, we'll be talking to two good friends of mine, Mark Cody and Bob Richards, who live over in Rumford. They're very active outdoorsmen. And I spent a wonderful week with them up on the island of Anacostia deer hunting a couple of years ago. We're going to recount some of our exciting adventures up there. And then Mark has some interesting hunting activity taking place down in Florida during his winter vacation. And he's going to fill us in on that. I think you'll find it fascinating. So we'll be talking to them after the 7:15 break. Right now, I'll remind you again that this program is sponsored in part every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal, Diane's very favorite hunting and fishing magazine. And if you'd like to get a subscription, you can do so by calling Alicia at the office during the week at 732-4880, 732-4880. And two, I want to remind you, we have a gift. We have a digital subscription, which is available for $15 a year, a good deal for Canadians who have found it too prohibitive to buy a mail subscription because of the Canadian postage rates. For $15, you can get the paper online. So be sure and check that out. If you have friends and neighbors in Canada, you might want to pass that on to them. And also want to remind you to check out our website. And if you're looking for fish and game records, whether it's fish or deer, bear, moose, we carry a complete listing of all the fish and game records in the state of Maine. And you can find that out by going to our website at sportingjournal.com and clicking on Outdoor Connections. You get all the latest fish and game records. And let's see what else. Outdoor Digest time right now. I want to remind you again, the Any Deer application process is working right now, and you have until August 1st at midnight to get your application in. Now, Di, I filled out your DOA application, and I did mine as well. And you have until August 1st, and I think they'll announce the lottery winners on August 15th. So remember, time is a-wasting. August 1st is next week, isn't it? Yeah. So you don't have a lot of time left. So make sure if you'd like to file for a DOA permit, make sure you do it before August 1st. And we're going to be hooking up here by phone with Mark Laddie at the Fish and Wildlife Department, who's going to tell us a little bit about the information meetings taking place, I believe.
Hi, Mark.
And Norm is endeavoring to hook up with Mark right now. Then after that, we're going to be telling you a little bit about the Muskie Derby up in Fort Kent. Do we have Mark standing by? Good evening, Mark.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Well, I'm doing better than I was last week. How about yourself?
Doing pretty good, thank you.
Well, great to have you here. We appreciate it. I wanted to invite you to come on to maybe brief the folks a little bit on the Game Warden Information Sessions that are going to take place, I understand, this month, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I'd be happy to. We've been running these for a couple of years now. We have them at our regional headquarters, and they've been quite popular. It's a great opportunity to stop by, meet a few game wardens, and really talk one-on-one about, you know, what it's like to be a Maine game warden, and, you know, what, you know, if there are things you need to do or things that you can plan, you know, for a career in conservation law enforcement.
Wow, what an opportunity. Now, so anybody who's interested, there's no strings attached. You don't have to sign up or anything. Just a chance to find out what's going on with the game wardens, right?
Yeah, you can sign up if you want. You can go to our website and sign up there. But yeah, no, they're free and open, and just swing by. And it's a great time to get some one-on-one, you know, FaceTime with a game warden. And there's going to be multiple game wardens there. Everybody from district game wardens to some of the, you know, senior game wardens who supervise some of the lieutenants who are oversee the area, oversee the division, and they can give you a better idea of what it's like, you know, what a typical day looks like, or, you know, what, you know, if you're in it for 10 to 15 years, what that looks like, your promotional opportunities, and then even some nuts and bolts questions like, you know, what's your retirement like? You know, what's the pay like? What's the vacation and schedule like? But, you know, if you're interested in a field of law enforcement, it's really a great way to find out a little bit more about, you know, just what a game warden does.
Can you give us an idea where these sessions are being held and the dates and so forth?
Yeah, so they're going to be at our regional headquarters in Gray and Sydney and Ashland and Bangor. And I don't have the dates with me right offhand, Paul. I'm sorry about that.
Is this during the month of August?
Yes, it is during the month of August. But if you go to our website, they're all right there. You can sign up if you want, but one of the nice things about signing up is you'll be, you know, you'll sign up for other opportunities regarding game wardens, other news that happens. You'll also be on a list that, you know, if there are openings right now, we are hiring. Mm-hmm. We have an open process right now where you can go in and get the process started by taking your physical and then, you know, going on into the interview process. But it's really a great way to see, you know, if being a game warden is something that you want to do.
Yeah. Do you have, how many openings do you have? So there are actually jobs available right now then.
There are jobs available due to retirements. We have about six or seven openings right now.
Wow.
So it's about a year and a half process where if you start it, you go through the interview process, and then you go, if you're accepted, you'll go into the Maine Criminal Justice Academy. Like any law enforcement officer in the state, and these law enforcement officers or game wardens, after they graduate from that, will go into the advanced warden school, which is 12 weeks. And there you'll learn, you know, techniques like investigating a wildlife crime scene, like a poached deer or poached moose, or you know, how to, approach another boater when you're on a boat yourself, and what's the proper way to do that.
Yeah.
Just kind of some nuts and bolts of what it's like to be a game warden. And then once you get out of that, you'll be paired with a field training officer for a while.
Yeah.
And you'll go through that. So that way we've got some highly trained individuals once they come into, you know, once they go into the field, they get as much training as any other law enforcement officer in the state.
Yeah. Is there any type of age limit on that? If a guy like Norm Plord wanted to apply for game warden, is he too old?
We could make an exception.
Oh, okay. Now, how about 80 or older?
We'd love to have you back, Paul, in the department.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can still do one push-up.
Yeah.
Okay, so if anybody wants to find out when these are taking place, they go to MEFishWildlife.com, right? The website?
That's right.
And they can get a complete listing.
MEFishWildlife.com, and there's a complete listing of places and times.
All right. Hey, we appreciate you filling us in on that, Mark. And, boy, if I was a younger guy, I'd jump on that. I'll tell you, I think that'd be a great way to spend your life. Yeah.
You know, it's a wonderful way to be outside and really be in the main outdoors.
You know,
if you love the outdoors, that's a job for you. Yeah.
Isn't your son a game warden?
He is. He's been a game warden for about 6 years now. He loves it. He's a canine handler. The job really offers a lot of opportunities in a lot of different ways.
Porter. Yeah, so you're not very proud of him, right?
No.
No. All right. Well, that's
very
great.
Impressive of him.
What's his first name? What's your son's name?
It's Michael Laddie.
All right, great. Well, good for you. And we appreciate you spending a time with us tonight on your Sunday night. What a beautiful night, huh?
Oh, it is. It's been a gorgeous weekend.
Yeah.
That's why we, go through winters in Maine. It's to get weekends like this in the summer.
And they are special when they're like today. Okay.
They really are.
Thank you so much, Mark. We appreciate your help.
All right, Paul. Have a good night.
You
thank
too.
You.
Yeah, take care. Yep, bye-bye.
All right.
All right, there you go. There's your chance. If you're interested in being a game warden, they're going to have special sessions. You can talk one-on-one with a game warden, ask any questions, like a good opportunity to find out what it's all about. Check out the website. You'll find a complete listing. I think they have one in Bangor, one down in Gray, and I think also up in Ashland, up in the county. So check it out.
Sydney. Yeah.
And if you're interested, or if you know anybody who might be interested in a game warden, be sure you pass that information on to them. Okay, at this time, we always like to entertain you a little bit with some wonderful music. And this time, Norma's going to raise the baton and call in the band.
I'm the big boss, Bass.
Yeah.
And you were.
Come on, Diane, you can do it.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Hey, that was good. That was an octave above. That was good. Okay, we're going to keep this short and sweet, everybody. Now, listen to this. This is important. The Fort Kent International Muskie Derby is taking place up in Fort Kent, one of my favorite towns, one of Norm's favorite towns. It is going to take place on August 9th, 10th, and 11th. Now, this is a big deal, okay? You go up there and you fish for muskie on the St. John River and its tributaries, right? As well, right,
that's
Norm?
That's correct. You got St. John and St. Francis, the Fish River.
In the Fish River, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, they're going to have this. There's a $10,000 purse. Now, that ain't small change.
No, that's pretty impressive.
A $10,000 purse for those who catch the biggest muskies. And this is taking place again, August 9, 10, and 11 in Fort Kent. The Derby starts at 9 in the morning sharp on Friday, and it goes all weekend. And it's a chance to catch some pretty big fish. And chance to win some pretty big money, some cash as well. So next week, I think we're going to have somebody on, a spokesman from the Derby, to give you more details. But that's the date, August 9th, 10th, and 11th. It takes place in Fort Kent. There's a $10,000 purse. And it's on the St. John River west of Grand Falls and all of its tributaries. And the minimum length is, they don't accept any fish. Listen to this, Norm. You can't even enter a fish that's less than 38 inches.
That's correct.
Wow. I wonder what are some of the record muskies up there? Any idea what they're over 40?
I thought I've heard of like a 44.
44?
44, 45,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
That's got to be what, 8, 10-pound fish?
I would say probably more.
Yeah.
Because we caught a 39-inch pike, and that was 12 and a half pounds.
12 and a half pounds. So maybe 10 pounders even, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, big deal, Fort Kent. Write that on your calendar if you're looking for some excitement. Up in Fort Kent, August 9, 10, and 11. And we're going to try to have somebody on from the International Derby Committee next week to give you more details on that, maybe answer some questions that anybody might have. Fishing Derby in Fort Kent. Put that on your calendar if you're looking for some fun and excitement. And that pretty much wraps up Outdoor Digest. And again, our guests tonight are at Mark Cody and Bob Richards, Rumford Sportsmen, are going to be with us. And we're going to recount some of our exciting hunting adventures up on Anacostia Island. And Mark also has been doing some exciting hunts down in Florida he's going to tell you about. But right now, we have a trivia question. And this is good for a year subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal. Now, what's the number again, Di, if somebody wants to dial in and take a chance on the trivia question?
1-800-966-1039.
All right, and that is a toll-free statewide number. If you're calling, we like to urge you not to put your phone on speaker. That makes it easier for us here, and Norm appreciates it, and it'll give you a better signal, and we can hear what you're talking about. Okay, Diane has the question. And again, if you get the answer, I'm going to make sure you get, I'm going to make sure you get a subscription to the Sporting Journal. What's the question, Diane?
I'm looking for it.
See right there where it says question?
What is the only marsupial in North America?
The only marsupial in North America. Now, last week, we appreciate Matt Dunlap doing the show. And he got on some Latin tangent of some kind, and we don't do any Latin here now. Marsupial is that's not Latin, is it?
No.
What is a marsupial? Do you know? Is that like a kangaroo? Would be a marsupial, right?
I think so.
All right. So Diane wants you to tell her what's the only marsupial in North America, and if you guess kangaroo, that's wrong. All right. We want to know what is the only marsupial in North America. We may ask you to spell marsupial. Other than that, 1-800-966-1039. You ponder that, and we'll be expecting you to call us with the right answer promptly. Okay, we are back with Maine Outdoors, and Judge Diane is waiting for you to judge. She's waiting to judge the answer to your question. We want you to tell us what's the only marsupial in North America. And we have a call. Let's take a good evening, caller. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Ted, and I'm calling from Amity up here in the county.
Oh, Amity. How's the potato blossoms? Are they out up there now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, did you pick potatoes when you were a kid?
No, I'm not from up here originally. I'm from the South.
Oh, you don't sound like you're from Aroostook County, no. Okay, so you obviously didn't pick potatoes unless you were picking sweet potatoes down in Alabama, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay, Ted, anyway, we're glad you're up in Amity, and we're glad you're listening to the program, and we're standing by for your answer. Do you have one?
Yes, sir. That would be the possum, or as some people call it, the opossum.
Okay. In the South, they call it an opossum, don't they, or do they?
No, we call it a possum down home.
A possum, yeah. There's a country singer who called a possum, right? George Jones, did they call him the possum?
George Jones.
yeah, right.
That was one of his nicknames, yeah.
Yeah, right. Among many, yeah. Okay, well, congratulations, Ted. That is precisely the right answer. And do you know, how does a possum differ from a non-marsupial? Do you know the difference?
It carries its young in its pouch.
Yeah.
That's one of the main things.
Yeah, I read somewhere, I looked it up because I want to look smart on the radio, you know. what they do is they're born not completely, they're not completely developed, and they're in the possum, and they suckle in the possum, in the belly of the possum. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah,
correct. That's a good answer. And we're going to make sure you get a subscription to the Sporting Journal, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Anything else on your mind tonight, Ted?
No, not really. I'm just looking forward to deer season, for sure.
Oh, I bet you are. And me too. I love the deer hunts. One of my favorite things. And I'm blessed at my advanced age to still be able to walk in the woods. You know what I mean?
I hear that.
Yeah.
I hear that. I'm 74 myself.
Well, you're just a kid.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, deer season will be here before we know it, Ted, and make sure you get in shape so we can get in the woods and get out safely, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And you stay on the line, and Norm Plord's going to get your mailing address, and we'll get you signed up for that subscription.
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you for listening, and you have a good day.
You too.
Don't go away. Norm will be talking to you momentarily. Okay, that's the correct answer. A possum is the only marsupial in North America, according to the source that I used to check out these trivia questions. And Diane, you guessed that before the show, right? You know what the answer to that
was.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would be another marsupial besides a kangaroo? Do you know?
Kangaroo.
Kangaroo is a marsupial, right? They have a
possum.
Yeah, possum. But can you think of another besides a kangaroo and a possum? I'm not sure I could either. Okay, we're going to be talking to our guest tonight, Mark Cody and Bob Richards over there in Rumford. And as soon as Norm makes the hookup, we'll connect with them, and we're going to talk a little bit about some hunting experiences that we've shared together. And Mark is an avid outdoorsman. He's probably one of the most passionate hunters I know. And he knows his stuff, and he knows his way around the deer woods as well, as does his friend Bob Richards. And Bob had an interesting experience up in Anacostia, and we'll get him to maybe, if his wife will let him, we'll get him to tell his story. He has quite a survival story when we were up in the Anacostia area during early December. And Norma's endeavoring to reach him right now at the magic number. And again, if you want to call in our program tonight, the number is 1-800-966-1039. And we always invite you to participate in our program. Next week, we're going to be hopefully talking to Commissioner Camuso, who's going to come on the show by phone. And I hope, I'm trying to get reach her, to have her explain some of the progress being made in protecting deer wintering areas in Maine. Are they there? Good evening. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, sir. Yes, and Bob's sitting here beside me.
Okay. Hi to you, Mark, and hi to you, Bob. Nice to have you guys with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're looking forward to talking to you. We introduced you a little bit at the start of the program, but I introduced you as some of the most skilled hunters I know. How about that, huh?
Wow, can we use you as a reference?
Yeah, you sure can, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Mark, folks at home don't know that, but the three of us had a great trip deer hunting up in Anacostia a few years ago, and
yes, we did.
You knew the ropes, so you were kind of like my guide and host up there, and you did a wonderful job. And as I've told you time and time again, it's probably, I'm an avid deer hunter, have been all my life, and it's probably one of the most exciting, pleasing, satisfying adventures I've ever had in my life, and I've had a few. Let me tell you, that was great. We had a good time. No?
Yeah, absolutely.
We sure did.
Yeah.
Camp life was just as fun as a hunt.
Yeah. Mark, tell us, let's do this. What we normally do on this program, we assume folks don't know you as well as we do. So I'd like to have you, Mark, and also Bob, just tell our listeners a little bit about how you happen to be such passionate hunters and how it all started for you in your life, okay? Starting with Mark, can you tell us a little bit?
Sure. Well, I'm probably one of, like, every hunter out there. It all started with my dad. My whole family hunted, and I remember being 8 years old, wasn't legally able to hold a rifle yet, but I wanted to go out with him, and I didn't have any orange, but I had one of those snorkel parkas, if you remember those back. And it had the fur around the hood.
Yeah,
but the bag was orange, so my mother said, "Well, just turn his pocket around." So I went, I put that around in an inside-out snorkel pocket with the fur of the pocket tucked in the back, and all I can remember hearing my father say is, "Geez, you sound like a bull elephant following me."
All right, so you started young then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I did too. I did too as well. My dad brought me along. Now, how about you, Bob? How'd you get interested in hunting?
Same thing. My dad was an avid hunter, and right from, I guess, when I was able to walk, I was with him lugging a BB gun or whatever. And back in the day, of course, you and I are close to the same age. It was all black and red jackets.
Oh, it was. Yeah. There was no blaze orange back then.
Yeah. That's how we grew up. That was the way it was.
Yeah.
Everybody did.
Yeah. And are both you guys natives of Rumford?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you both grew up there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got some great hunting country over there, that's for sure. We're gonna take. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I said we used to until Mark got of age.
Okay, we're gonna take a short break here, and when we come back, we're gonna recount some of our exciting adventures up in Anacostia, and then we have time, Mark. I wanted you to tell us about your unusual hunt activity down in Florida. Okay.
You got it.
All right, we'll take a short break. You stay with us, gents, okay?
You got it.
All right, you folks at home, stay with us. We'll be right back. Okay, we are back with Maine Outdoors. If you joined us late, our guests tonight are Rumford sportsmen Mark Cody and Bob Richards. Are you there, gents?
Yes, we are.
Well, we appreciate you hanging around. What a great day today, huh?
Oh, beautiful day.
Yeah.
Beautiful day.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. Let's, now that we know a little bit about your background, let's switch gears and go up to Anacostia, okay?
Sure, let's go. You want to leave now?
Yeah, we want to leave right now. We were there, was it 2 years ago? Time flies when you're having fun. Mark, you and Bob have been, you've been up there numbers of times, and you've been very blessed because a lot of deer hunters, it's one hunt of a lifetime. And I had a chance to go up there, and it was just the most exciting time I've ever had in the deer woods. And tell us a little bit about your, I don't know how long you gents have been visiting up there, but quite a while. Tell us about your experiences with that famous island up there. Maybe folks don't even know what Anacostia is. Maybe you could explain that, Mark.
Yeah.
Anacostia Island is in the Gulf of the St. Lawrence. It's about a third the size of New Hampshire. So everybody thinks if you're hunting on an island, it's a fish in a barrel, but it's still a very large island, and it's not always as easy as people might think. But there are a lot more deer per square mile. I don't know what the number is. I used to know what it is, but I don't know that now. But as you mentioned, when I first went up there, it was my one and only trip of a lifetime that I went up. But the good thing about it is when you do go, you have priority for the same spot for the next year. So I booked for the second year, and then the next year I got a little bit better week, a little bit better week. I literally had to wait for people to die to get the weeks that the week that we have now. So it's a probably the best week on the best camp of the whole island.
Wow.
So I don't think we've ever been skunked.
No,
I don't think we've always come home. We are allowed two deer apiece of either sex, and we've always come home with our deer. Bob has taken some bruises. He's taken some really nice deer.
Katie.
Yeah, my daughter. Yeah, my daughter.
Probably the queen up there.
Yeah, she's a.
Yeah, she's quite a hunter.
Yeah,
your daughter Katie. Yeah.
A bunch of nice big bucks.
Yeah. Bob Richard, Bob, how many trips have you made up there to the island?
I think it's like 7 or 8, maybe 8.
Have you really? Wow. Yeah. It never gets dull, does it?
Never gets old.
No.
It's always something different. Yeah. It's always something different. I mean, the last year, the snow was perfect. The year before, actually, I think it was 3 years ago that you went with us, Paul.
Right. Oh, was it?
Yeah, because not last year, but the year before,
they
had a major snowstorm in November that basically crippled the island. They you know, the snow was like 36 inches deep.
Oh, no kidding. And, was that last fall?
Not last fall, the year before.
The year before. Wow.
Yeah. And so, they were actually people refunds to stay home. But we went anyway, and when we got there, the snow had melted. So the hunting was fantastic for us.
Yeah. So tell our listeners a little bit the process of getting there. How does one? I mean, I know because I went with you guys, but for those who may not know, how do you get there and what's the process?
Well, of course you gotta book your spot in the reservation desk, and then when you go, we drive up to Mojolie is the name of the place. It's one of the last places on the mainland before you reach the on the banks of the St. Lawrence River.
About a nine-hour trip.
It's right? About a nine-hour drive to get there, and then it's like an hour and 15-minute flight to get to the island. Then you buy your groceries and your license and all that stuff. Then our camp is 4 hours by dirt road to get to the actual camp. So
high speed.
High speed, yeah.
that was the most exciting part of the whole trip, was the ride on that 100 miles of dirt road going too fast on the big pickup truck, right?
Yeah, bouncing.
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, so Mark and Bob, you've had a lot of experience up there. I had that one great adventure, and I'll never ever forget it. If somebody is planning to look into a trip like that, what would you recommend? What time of year would you recommend they go? And maybe some tips for folks who might want to sign up for that. Maybe not next year. Maybe the year after. What would you suggest they do as far as what type of season is the best time to go there?
First of all, you got to wait for someone to die.
Yeah.
Is that crowded, huh? I mean,
it's a little difficult to get in unless you've been there or know someone that.
Right. Yeah.
But they have a good PR system up there. You call and they will, put you on a list or however they do it. Yeah. Mark knows more about
it. So the last 2 years, there's been a waiting list. There have been zero openings.
Is that right? Wow.
The last 2 years. I say zero openings on a camp that's any good. There's some that are unguided, rustic shelters, pit toilets, and plug your water stuff. So those you might, October is not a good month to hunt. Just like here, it's pre-rut, so the deer aren't really moving. So, November, of course, is the best. And the week that we go is the first week of December, which is also they're just finishing their rut, but they're also getting back into their normal eating patterns. So they start heading to their wintering yards, and the camp that we go to is not far from those wintering yards. So that's why we have such good luck of seeing the deer. So, the down point of the week that we go is sometimes they're losing their antlers then. So if you're looking for
cold.
It is cold.
And snowy.
Yeah. And ice and
like
that.
The rivers are froze up. Yeah. It's difficult.
One of the things I found interesting was that apparently there are no natural predators on that island except for man, right? There are no coyotes or bears.
No, the dog, the residents can't even have a domestic dog.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of fox that get some of the newborn deer, but that's, within 2 weeks, the deer are stealthy enough to keep away from the fox.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, for the predators.
Yeah. One of the things that made it exciting for me is the first day up there on a stand, I counted 50 deer before noon crossing, and they were migrating right down to the coast.
Yeah, they were headed towards the wintering yards.
And that takes place late in the season. That wouldn't happen in late October, right? Yeah, that was fascinating to see. When you see that many deer, if you're a deer hunter and you see that many deer and you have a chance to shop around, it makes it particularly interesting and exciting, doesn't it?
Well, and the other thing is it makes you a better hunter because you're actually able to watch what the habits are. And, the first time that I saw that I could distinguish a buck fawn from a doe fawn was how they urinate.
Oh, no kidding.
A doe squats and a buck just opens his rear legs, So so it makes you a better hunter, and just to be able to watch them, that deer that you don't plan on killing.
Yeah. What I think it'd be a good time, but we're going to have to take another break in a minute. But I think we've got time before the break, Norm. Bob Richards, you had an unusual adventure when we were up there. And I wrote about it in the Northwood Sporting Journal. And did you get your wife's permission to retell that story?
Not really.
No.
I didn't get not to ever go back there.
No. Well, Bob, if you don't mind, little disclosure. Tell our folks what happened to you up there. I mean, it was really a survival situation. Could you recount it for our listeners?
Yes, I could. Yeah, it was a normal hunt. Oh, and actually, it wasn't normal. We, instead of hunting the sector I was in, we usually have each have a sector, and nobody kind of, you know, overruns our sectors. But in this particular day, there was nothing happening where I was, and I decided, with a little bit of permission from Mark, to change areas. Which he said there was nobody in that one another area, so that's what I chose to do. I took a four-wheeler and going up on the Martin La Mea River, which I've hunted hundreds of times, and it's just one of them things. It was cold, but it wasn't brutally cold like it normally is.
Now, so there's snow on the ground.
Snow on the ground, yep. ice, wind blowing, ice on the river, and normally we have a trail, but when you've got, you know, so much snow blowing and weather, bad weather, things are deceiving. And of course, what really screwed me up is I jumped a couple of deer. You know, of course, being a deer hunter, I got a little excited, and I crossed the section of ice which I shouldn't have been on, but you know, I went through. So whoever tells you that these three wheels,
how deep was the water? I think they'd like to know.
Well, I didn't touch bottom, if that's what you mean.
You crossed, in other words, as I recall up there, because I think I rode on the back of one of those ATVs with Mark, but as I recall, there were places you could cross where it was relatively shallow, and there were other places where it was dangerous. And exactly. If you followed the ATV trail where the guy went before you, you had a pretty good chance of getting across, even though you might have gotten your feet wet. But you got off the trail, Bob, right?
Well, yes, I did, but
this would probably be a funnier story. If I told you, but we're gonna let him.
So your attention was diverted by seeing a couple of deer, so you weren't paying attention to those ATV tracks. And let's be honest, right?
Yes, it was. That's true.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I went through, and I had to paddle my way back to shore. And whoever told you that these ATVs float? It's full of it.
They don't float, no.
They went to the bottom, and so I got to shore, and by this time, it's late afternoon, and I'm thinking, I'm 20 miles from camp.
Wow.
And I'm set, soaking wet. Luckily, and I didn't even know it at the time, but my rifle was still on my back. I don't know how I made it to shore with my rifle on my back. And, of course, my pack and everything was on the bottom, no matches, which probably wouldn't have done me any good anyway.
Yeah.
I just thought, I said, you know, I'm not going out this way. There's no way. You know, I mean, I spent the night in the woods before.
Yeah.
I did then, and I knew I wasn't going to like it then because I would have probably froze because it was that cold.
Yeah.
And I started walking back, crossing the river on the, you know, at first I was a little cautious where I was crossing. You know, I was probably only up to my knees or whatever. And then finally, you know, I had to get out of here. So I was wading across in a lot of places. So, and it was, luckily it was only in the 20s. Right, Mike?
Yeah.
So after I walked probably a mile, then I had like 19 miles to go. Nobody's going to find me.
Now, Bob, by this time, your clothing must be getting sort of rigid, right?
Actually, you're not going to believe this, but as long as I stayed out of the water, I had enough body heat, you know, and I was moving all the time. I never stopped.
Yeah.
And I wasn't, I mean, I was cold, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I wasn't like freezing.
Yeah.
So I rounded this bend. And I thought I was seeing a mirage. I saw one of the guys that we hunt with. They didn't know I was in on that sector. And it was strange because I never seen this. He had these orange, I'll never forget it, these orange glasses on. You know, and I'm looking, what is that? You know, it's strange. So it was one of our crew, and he saw me about the same time I saw him. So he spun the four-wheeler around. He was going to leave. You know, to me, right? So I'm trying to get my rifle off. We're going to fire a couple shots in the air or shoot him, one or the other. I'm the four-wheeler. So anyway, so he happens to look back, and I'm waving, right? So finally he drives up. He says, holy shit, don't you know the international distress signal is both on? I said, this one's frozen. They're like, all right, please. So he loaded me on the four-wheeler. And we headed to camp, and, you know, like I said, 18 miles, 15, 18, whatever it was.
Oh.
And the strange thing about it, is I wasn't cold. I mean, I was even getting concerned. I said, you know, I'm starting to warm up. And my clothes were froze solid because the wind protected me.
Yeah.
So when I got the camp, I mean, when they had to pry me off the four wheeler.
We had to help him get undressed. He was in trouble. He really was.
I was in trouble, but I never got hypothermia. The accommodations are great. There's hot showers, so I got right in the shower.
Whiskey.
A little bit of whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I bet. I remember what you looked like when you walked through the door, and I was amazed you were still alive. Incredible.
Yeah. So it worked out well.
Yeah.
I promised my wife I'd never go back again, but I lied.
Yeah. What did your wife think of that story?
Well, I think Mark's the one that told her. I wasn't even going to tell her.
All's well that ends well, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great story. And well, you're a tough guy, I'll tell you that. You are a tough guy. We're going to take a short break again, gents, to pay the bills, and when we come back, I'm going to ask Mark to tell you about his Florida hunts, okay?
All right.
Okay. Just want to remind everybody at home that this program is sponsored every week in part by General Appliance and Brewer. They've been sponsoring this show for, I don't know, more than 20, 25 years, and they have a complete line of appliances, both new and used, gas and electric, and they stand behind everything they sell. They service everything they sell, and they're just great folks to do business with. General Appliance and Brewer, they have a complete line of every type of appliance you could dream of, and they recondition them, and they've got some really reasonable prices, and we urge you to consider patronizing them as we do. General Appliance and Brewer, they're at a new location now on 103 Center Street, and they have a phone number if you want to give Gary Coleman's the boss there, and he's been servicing appliances for years, and he knows his stuff. 989-3714, 989-3714, and they also carry a complete line of Norm's favorite compost toilets.
Right the way, baby.
And remember, these compost toilets are great for camps because you don't have to dig a septic tank and you have to put in a leach field, none of that stuff. They work with chemistry, and they're just an amazing invention. Compost toilets at General Appliance in Brewer, the place to go for all of your appliance needs, and we recommend them to you highly. General Appliance in Brewer. Are you still there, folks? Mark and Bob.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark. You're a guy, I've never seen a guy that loves to hunt the way you do, and we found out when we had dinner with you folks over there in Rumford there this summer, we found out that you have an interesting new hunting hobby down in Central Florida. Tell us about that, Mark.
Well, I've been in the insurance and investment years for about 33 years, and everybody's has always tried to get me to golf, and it's just never done anything for me, right? But when they told me that there are wild hogs that are tearing up the golf course, and they let me on with a rifle, it changed my
football. It changed your game.
So I'm their nuisance hog remover, and we also take care of, you know, varmints as well. But the last episode that I had, there were four pigs that were frequenting the course during the day, and I can't hunt during the day because there's golfers there. So usually
that makes sense.
It makes it. I don't want to mess, you know what I'm saying? So they were coming during the day, and luckily I don't know if you remember, about a month ago we had there was a real heavy rain. It was like 8 inches of rain down in Southwest Florida, and it actually shut the golf course down because it was too soggy to run the carts on. So I said, well, there's never a better time to go hunt during the day. There's no golf. So I went up there, and where they were coming out was number 4 green, right next to the flag, and it was about a 10-foot raised hole. So I drove the golf cart on the back side of it so they wouldn't see me, and I climbed up on the hole, and I put my backpack over it. I had a sniper type rifle, and a bull barrel, and a .22 250, And I had to, they came out about, I don't know, two fairways over. So I was able to, I was literally laying on the green, and I shot one of the pigs. A hole in one.
So this is during the daytime?
This was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. Yes, I didn't. Yeah. I thought these feral pigs usually came out after dark. But they
normally do. And Bob has been on the golf cart with me several times. You want to hear somebody chuckle like a schoolgirl when we're out there hunting. But yes, you're right. They normally come out at night. It's very uncommon that they come out during the day. And the three brothers or sisters that are left of those pigs are still coming out during the day. So I still have something to do, but I guess I got to wait for a rainstorm.
So these feral hogs, they raise havoc with the golf course, tear it up?
They tear it to snot. I mean, when I first started doing it, it was a couple of years ago in October, they had one fairway. Well, it was the rough. It wasn't on the actual fairway. They put enough pesticides on the fairway that it keeps the. They're actually looking for grubs, is what everybody thinks. Roots, but they're not. They're looking for grubs. Anyway, right from the tee box all the way to the green was all torn up. And I set up shop. I put a big corral trap. I caught three, I think, the first night. Then we shot like four or five at night after that. And that's a whole new level of redneck, too, by the way.
Yeah.
running around on a golf cart with thermal imaging.
I imagine the golf course manager must be pretty pleased with you, right?
Yeah.
Even in all the members, it's kind of a private course. It is over to the public.
Yeah.
But every go by, every time.
Yeah, so I can just picture you and Bob riding around a golf cart with your 225-20s or whatever in the golf bag. Yeah,
I realized that Bob was a pretty good shot. There was an armadillo that they make a mess too, by the way.
And
Bob shot about four times, I think.
these feral hogs, do some of them eat pretty well? Do they taste all right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the sows are actually very good to eating, and the young pigs. I mean, when you get them up to about 24 inches, we call them hibachi pigs. You skin them and cut the heads and the feet off, and cook them like you would a turkey. I mean, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I've eaten. Diane and I hunted them down in Texas one time, and one of them was very good, and one was very bad. So I guess it depends. Yeah.
The boars, some of the big old burly boars, they're just like a big old rancid buck up here. Yeah. You know, they just, they taste like, you know, real musty, you know. So most of the, it's pretty rare to get a good boar. Bob shot a nice boar down there with me, and it was a good-sized boar.
And it didn't stink, there was no smell.
And he ate it.
We're up against the clock, guys, but it's been an entertaining 30, 40 minutes with you folks. We appreciate you taking time to be with us, and you're a couple of characters, you two, and congratulations on your great hunting successes, and thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
All right, have a good summer, guys. Thanks a lot.
You too.
Yep, bye-bye. All right, and that was Bob Richard Marcotti from Rumford, and we'll be with you next week. We're hoping to talk to Commissioner Camuso, who's going to tell you about how to protect deer wintering areas. And we'll see you all next week right here on Maine Outdoors.